Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big money on your next painting project. Now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Thanks, man. I'd like to say this was down to my hard work and effort, but it was all Sean and Ash, basically, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself. What is it that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a YouTube channel. I do street interviews, man on the street interviews, and political commentary, you know, and so mainly what I'm known for is my street videos. I go around pretty much all over the United States, primarily around California, in, you know, Democrat-run California. And I go out in some videos, we talk to people and just kind of get their perspective, a little bit more reportery, you know, reporting style a little bit, getting some viewpoints on various topics. We don't shy away from anything. So I do that. I also challenge people's kind of, you know, their beliefs, why they believe what they believe. And then also, if they say something incorrect, I try to bring up some information that may actually change their mind, because a lot of people were getting so set in our ways. And, you know, we want to encourage more civil political discourse, even though even if that's kind of in public, we tend to do it in a very friendly way and just a curious way as well. So,
yeah, it's fascinating because the political divide has been so pronounced, especially in the USA. And one of the biggest problems in that regard is that people on opposite sides of the debate are not really having conversations. So tell me a little bit about, I mean, it falls into the category of like street epistemology, doesn't it? I mean, how do you tend to approach these people? What kind of methods do you use to do your best to ensure a productive conversation rather than an outright shouting match?
For sure. And you know, this is always kind of a hard question to answer, because I do, you know, I play it like pretty loose when it comes to, like, the style of video that I do. Some videos are way more combative and I have a stance and I'm going to make that stance, something that's just like I believe to be objectively true. And I want to help educate people. Other ones, they can be just more a little bit more a curious approach and try to somewhat change their mind. I tend to go into the videos because I lean more conservative, right? And I'm open about that. I don't pretend to be like objective, and very few people are objective. I don't pretend to be like a centrist, and very few people are. You know, I have my opinions, and we can come to some agreements. But a lot of what I do, honestly, is just coming at it from a very friendly approach when it comes to, let's pick a topic. We recently did reparations or systemic racism in the United States. And so you want to ask people for examples of what that would be. And you tend to, you know, you want to let them speak, because it's really, it's about the conversations with the individual, but it's really also majorly about the video and how many people that video will reach. So if people get convinced by an argument that somebody makes in my video, that's great. If they can maybe get convinced by something that I'm saying, that's phenomenal. And so we really want to lay that out for, you know, to be on display for people to see on video, so that they can kind of, I guess, draw their own conclusions. You know, and people watching will know that I have my views on it. They'll know what I believe, but I try to give people an honest and fair chance to express their views. And so if it's something that's, you know, maybe they give like a bad example or something like that, we would very kindly, usually, you know, very kindly, I'm not like jabbing at people in public and stuff, try to say, okay, well, is that really what systemic racism would be? And then talk about what systemic racism is and see if we can work it out from there. And a lot of times we end up changing people's minds on the streets. Other times, you know, the conversation ends in a big fiery ball, just completely out of control. But usually we do a pretty good job at keeping the situation under control. I'm not out there to, you know, just piss people off. Right. Obviously, like, outraged people will be, they're funny for content, but it's not what all that we want the content to be. We want it to be educational, informative, and people can go home at the end of the day after watching that video and say, okay, well, hey, I can use this argument that James made or this point that James made because I didn't know this or something. at dinner with the family. Maybe the uncle keeps challenging on something. Okay, that's a good point. They can use that in their own lives. So really, it's just arming people with truth to use at the workplace, if you want, you know, within your own life, in classrooms. And you know, that's really a big part of why I make the videos, to educate people, to arm them with good facts, with good talking points, so they can kind of challenge the insanity that's really sweeping, you know, the United States and probably the world.
Yeah, I agree that we do appear to have been completely deranged on the topic of skin color. And this issue of systemic racism is a fascinating one, especially in the US perspective. And I kind of suspect there's no small amount of tribalism that plays into this, because people will throw around the term systemic racism almost as a buzzword now. And what they're really saying is, I'm against racism. And on the face of it, I think what it appears when someone like you challenges the concept of systemic racism is in a roundabout way that you're somehow attempting to defend racism. So how do you make it clear to these people that, yes, obviously we accept racism is a very real and serious thing that needs addressing. However, systemic racism is a very specific thing that demands a very specific criteria backed up by very specific examples. How do you delineate between those things?
It's such a good question. And that's what the media, like, you know, that's really what they've made almost impossible, is if you challenge a particular narrative. Now it's like, oh my gosh, you're a bigot, you're a racist, whatever it may be. And it's like, okay, geez, like, you know, no, we're just having a conversation. I think really to answer that, you come at it from a place of like understanding how other people think. So let's say somebody's more far left, or let's just say they're maybe a registered Democrat. There's a lot of people out there that are willing to have these conversations if you just kind of lean into it right. Of course, there's a lot of people that are off the edge and they will never listen to you. You'll never change their minds, whatever. But there's a lot of people that just maybe they've been told to believe a certain thing. And you can approach it kind of just with little things like, hey, this is coming from a place of love, or hey, I'm just trying to understand this. And I know that sounds kind of silly to some people, but it actually does work. If you're delicate with your words when you're approaching a pretty, I would argue, pretty tough conversation that a lot of people totally don't understand, right? Systemic meaning like actually ingrained in the system, our institutions, policing, stuff like that, that's against a particular race, right? And people don't understand that. They'll say, oh, well, systemic racism is some guy had his bags checked in front of me and they were black and I was white and I didn't have that. It's like, okay, well, you know, context matters. There could be various things, right? They'll just blame anything on racism at that point. And really, if we're having that conversation about systemic racism and if it exists today, of course it exists in the past to a pretty large extent, right? But today, if we're having that conversation, I just approach it very delicately to allow them to kind of open up. And also, if you approach them delicately, it can not only allow them to open up, but also allow them to consume the information, listen to what you're saying, because it's impossible to get people to listen to you if you start right off the bat with their guard up. It's nearly impossible. They won't open up.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. I mean, this is an awkward aspect of the systemic racism debate. And normally, like, I wouldn't really want to talk about skin color. It wouldn't be something I think we need to get so invested in. I'm very much for the you know, the MLK idealized version of that sort of color blindness that really appeals to me, not only because it's appealing, but it actually works, as he's demonstrated so well in his work. But I mean, it's an uncomfortable fact a little bit as well, that if we were going to point to real aspects of systemic racism, we could actually point to perhaps anti-Asian sentiment within academia, not necessarily sentiment, but in terms of, you know, their, you know, hiring policies, admission policies, rather. In the UK, not so long ago, I think it may have been the Fire Service was found guilty of rejecting an applicant solely because they were white. And they were looking to fill some quotas. So, I mean, if we are going to look at the systems of racism that exist around us, it doesn't seem to be disproportionately affecting non-white people, as claimed.
No, it's quite the opposite. You know, I'm sure it's similar in the UK. We've completely overcorrected for systemic racism. And what you mentioned about the Asians is the Asian community is absolutely spot on when it comes to college acceptance rates. There's absolutely no doubt they get penalized when it comes to applying to these top colleges. And then, you know, you have people of color that actually get benefited there. And it's funny, going back to your point of, you would love to ignore it. And I think a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of what conservatives do in America, there's some instances where we've gone more on offense, and it's actually been a great thing. But a lot of it is just reactionary. Why am I talking about this? Why are we talking about systemic racism? Well, it's because we have to do some damage control, because the media, since about 2010, 2013, has been just selling the nation that racism is the greatest threat to our country. Systemic racism is alive and well. And, you know, you have to combat the lies, because they've repeated these lies that people of color are being systemically oppressed in today's society. And, you know, eventually it actually does make an impact. It makes a difference. People buy into this. They get completely brainwashed. You can look no further than how much of an uproar people were trying to make of unarmed Black Americans being shot by police. Now, of course, any unarmed person being shot by police is just an awful thing. Except for, you know, we have a country of 330 million people. That number that I just referred to tends to be around like 10 to 20 individuals a year in a country with 330 million people, over a million police officers.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And, you know, if you actually look into those numbers too, it's like half, if not more, are fighting with police officers. So it's not just like random people. So, and they grab onto this because we really do have like a shortage of supply, if I were to put it, a shortage of supply of like racist instances in our pretty massive country, that they'll grab onto literally anything, even if it's this tiny, tiny blip, you know, 10 to 15, like I mentioned, unarmed police shootings. Like, that's like within human error, right? You're going to have bad cops, you'll have mistakes, you'll have stuff like that in a country as large as ours. And you know, they'll grab onto these little instances. And the fact that they do this stuff just shows how desperate they are for these examples to divide. You have, the Gallup poll in the United States has been tracking race relations for like decades, right? And it was actually up until about 2013, it was up on a slight upward increase, and the numbers were pretty high. Everything was looking pretty good. And since then we've had it's basically just been plummeting since 2013. And you can also look at similar charts of like what the media has been doing. And ever since they discovered identity politics and the power of that, right? Because they see that, oh my gosh, dividing people based on race, making them afraid of like going outside and being shot by a cop, or making them afraid of white people being racist in the country, or whatever it may be, just turning everyone on each other. As soon as they figured that out, they never stopped. And you'll see the numbers that they use like racism, bigotry, whatever. You can search for those numbers. And ever since 2013, right, you know, around when they figured out about identity politics, those charts have skyrocketed. So race relations have plummeted along with the charts of showing the media milking, you know, this racial divide skyrocketing. So that's not a coincidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating to me if we look at the impact of George Floyd's murder. Now, for me, that's been the catalyst of so much. And it seems like, depending on the skin color of the people involved, certain assumptions are worked backwards from. They're assumed as true, and then everyone else has to do the fact checking afterwards. And you mentioned that you lean conservative. I lean left liberal, but I'm also very facts driven when it comes to incidents like this. So we had the murder of George Floyd, which you could spend all day saying it was completely unjustified. I'm glad justice was served and those responsible are now behind bars. There's no justification for that whatsoever. I think everyone who watched that video was horrified. However, the most uncomfortable truth really for the BLM narrative and everything that followed is the fact that there is no objective reason whatsoever to claim that murder was motivated by any sort of racist intent. Yet that was the assumption made from the get-go. And that's the reason why sports stars in my home country are getting down on one knee before a game, because some gentleman in Minnesota has been murdered. And I can't quite explain how this you know, the global hysteria has occurred to the point where we just accept on face value that that was essentially a racist lynching, and we accept that without any semblance of evidence.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think right or left, if you are seeking truth, right, you will automatically reject this insane mob mentality that's swept nations across the world, you know, because like what you just said, yes, there's no evidence of racism. Would I say that there's evidence of racism if there was objective, like, evidence of racism? Of course, because I want to actually inform people. I want to give them the truth. I'll tell people when I'm giving my opinion, and you'll be able to tell. I'm not hiding it. But we can talk facts, and that was one case where they saw that and they said, you know what, this is way more beneficial financially. Look how much money Black Lives Matter organization brought in. You know, if they just say, hey, it's racism, it doesn't matter. Our media is not, which is like shocking nowadays, but it's like they're not addicted, or they're not striving for the truth. They're addicted to just, hey, getting clicks and selling a story. And if you can say something's racist enough times, it kind of just becomes true for the general population. People don't spend as much time as you and me actually like digging into the truth, because what average person has that much time in their day? It takes you an entire day to figure out the truth nowadays. You know what I mean? So it's that would actually be another example of what I was just talking about. Like the supply for racism doesn't meet the demand that the mob is asking for nowadays.
Yeah, now that's a great answer. And just keeping on these weird labels of conservative and left wing and right wing, etc. There's a current war ideologically and legally, I suppose, and culturally waging over gender and biological sex. It's playing out in my home country large scale to the point now where, you know, pretenders for the top job in parliament are asked the question, what is a woman? It's become very, very important that people can answer that in the media. And I do a lot of work on the ground interviewing people on this, going to a female-led protest, you know, in England, in Scotland, places like that. And overwhelmingly, they are sort of left-leaning socialist women who are pushing back to this in the UK. However, in the States, the pushback [S2] Yes. [S1] Is mostly considered a sort of conservative pushback. You have people like Matthew Knowles is one of them.
Michael Knowles, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro, people like that seem to be the people that are pushing back more. So is this going to hurt the cause of pushing back against gender ideology in the USA, the fact that it's considered a right-wing interest or pet project?
Well, yeah, it's such a good question. There's a couple sections to the debate, and that has to do around that there is radical gender theory, which is more of, in the United States at least, more of a left-wing ideology that's being more so pushed as fact. So you're getting conservatives that are pushing back on this, trying to undo it, because they're, you know, nobody, you know, in the States, nobody cares if adults believe what they want to believe. That's great. You do your thing. I'm not out here getting pissed off at flat earth theory people. You're not going to find that. Right. You're just not right. But you would find that I would be pushing back if they were implementing it first through third grade. I would be saying the same thing I'm saying now, which is, what on earth is wrong with you people? And, you know, children don't need to be exposed to these ideologies that are incredibly, at least in our country, but incredibly, incredibly toxic. And I can touch on that in a sec, but it might shut some people down that it is conservatives pushing back. But when it comes to the children debate, I will say, when it comes to the children debate, there are a lot of actual feminists that are pushing back. And I would hardly argue that they're right wing, right? There are feminists that are pushing back on how children cannot consent to puberty blockers, you know, in the United States. And I think that's actually global too. And there's a lot of people that it's not a right-wing issue. It's incredibly bipartisan, and it should be bipartisan. That is not a conservative issue at all. Not at all. However, I will say with the ideology, let's say on college campuses and stuff, largely that would be conservatives trying to win that back. I mean, the left dominates every single institution in the United States. So you have media, you have college campuses, you have all the major corporations. They all back radical gender theory. And really the main fight right now is that at least I'm focused on, I would say, but a major fight would be preventing that from getting into children's lives. You know, children are incredibly impressionable. You tell them one thing and that will be the truth. So, and unfortunately, we also have a massive mental health crisis as well. And you'll see that a lot of these kids that are getting involved in trying to, you know, that are taking hormone blockers and are taking cross-sex hormones and are pursuing double mastectomy surgeries and all that stuff, you know, children under the age of 18, the studies are showing, and there's actually a decent amount of European studies because most of the good ones or long-term ones have been over in Europe. And it shows that a majority of these kids they have other issues. They're bipolar. They have all sorts of comorbidities, all sorts of issues, depression, yeah, whatever it may be.
Autism, onto these. Autism highly correlates as well, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. And so what we're doing, which is the craziest thing, is you know, we're seeing these children that have a lot of issues, and the answer is chemical castration. That seems hardly like it'll solve the problem. And the truth is it doesn't. And so when it comes to like what the truth is, this isn't a conservative issue. And I have been very pleased to see that there are a decent amount of left-wing people that are openly opposed to this being pushed on children. As for the ideology, though, making its way into schools, that's largely conservative, and we're trying to make it not so. A big culture break was What Is Woman documentary from Matt Walsh over at Daily Wire. That reached people that weren't conservative. And really, that's the goal. You know, people can believe in their ideologies, and that's great, but teaching them as fact to youth is unacceptable. And that goes for both right and left wing.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I call it gender creationism now, because it's very much a similar sort of emphasis from what we saw, like Christian creationism being attempted to be pushed in schools not so long ago in the States. But I don't know if you saw recently, I'm guessing you would have. I've wrote a piece on this in Spiked magazine in the UK about Scientific American pushing out an opinion piece last week claiming that human sex isn't binary. Which is just a gulf of pseudoscience and special pleading. It's some of the worst writing and reasoning I've ever seen. But there's this weird mentality in the institutions that if they just tell a lie or pretend something is true that it's not, they'll somehow magically be able to erase bigotry, discrimination, things like that. And my viewpoint is you don't have to lie about scientific reality to ensure equal rights for transgender people, which I agree transgender people should have all the rights I demand for myself. So what explains something like Scientific American producing an article that's fundamentally false on a basic fact of human biology?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm not even familiar with that recently being released, but when it came, I do a lot of editing. So I spend like half my days editing and half my days trying to catch up in the news. So stuff gets past me, but what's really interesting is a lot of these colleges, they will cancel programs as well that are studying completely reasonable things, trying to maybe combat some narratives that are being pushed. So you mentioned the pseudoscience and everything. A lot of that stuff's like totally protected by the media. Nobody's asking questions about any of this stuff. And that can get you in some real trouble. I mean, we would call that wokeism, right? It's that it's instead of like actually focusing on the science, you're woke enough to actually interfere with studies, research, whatever it may be, that could actually lead to some good, you know? So it kind of turns into this religious ideology that people just can't question.
Okay, well, maybe we've just got a bit of time for you to tell me about your work with Peter Boghossian. Peter's a pal of mine. I'm hoping to see him when he comes over to the UK sometime this month or early next month. What have you two been cooking up?
Well, okay, so Peter, I just met him actually in Portland. I was just there. I was there with Billboard Chris as well. He's been traveling North America. He mainly focuses on, you know, how children can't consent to puberty blockers. And so that was the topic that we talked about. And Peter joined the video. And Peter has a, you know, he does a lot more of the epistemology. And so he joined us for just casual conversations at Portland State University, the heart of, you know, radical gender theory, basically. And he was really, really excellent. I met him for the first time. He's a straightforward guy. And I think his whole process to street conversations and getting people to really dig deep into what they believe, why they believe it is, I mean, I don't know, I'd probably argue that he's better on the street than I am. He's remarkable. And obviously he's a very famous philosopher in the area. So that was a huge pleasure. It was kind of funny bringing him along doing my style videos instead of his style. So, but he was really great. He was largely focused when we were talking because we went to Portland State University, and he was largely focused on kind of this insane pushback on just us having any conversations. And like I mentioned, you know, we don't go there like bullying people. We don't go there being mean to people, rude to people. And I can't think of two guys that are more open to just very polite conversations than Peter and Chris. And so it was such a pleasure working with both of them. And, you know, Chris was largely focused on, Peter was largely focused during our collaboration video on just the insane pushback of these conversations. We had students assaulting us. We had students that were actually brave enough to be even engaging in conversation with us. And I say brave just because they're surrounded by this mob of students at this college that don't want free speech. You know, these aren't liberals, by the way. Like these are the opposite of liberals. They are not liberals.
But they are utterly convinced that they are liberals. That's the strange thing, isn't it?
So that's so true. They are incredibly convinced. They believe that they are just incredibly reasonable liberals, but they're more authoritarians. You know, they do not want speech. They don't want it to happen on the campus. They will bring speakers and destroy the conversation so you can't hear. They'll put it in your ear so your ear's ringing for the next few days. They will physically assault you. Billboard Chris had his phone taken by an activist and it was thrown 20 feet. And so Chris was largely back to that. He was largely focused on that pushback with the students that were willing to have conversations with us. And I'll be releasing this footage. We're doing a multi-part episode on my YouTube channel, just highlighting all this. I'm taking my time with it though, because, you know, we want to make sure we really get the message across and are able to highlight Chris's work, Peter's work and all of that. So it was a great experience though. First time hanging out with him. And if you see him on camera, he's the same way in person. Just, he's always looking for the truth, always asking really, really deep, good questions. And he's quick as well. So
love Pete. Yeah, smart, very smart cookie for sure. I'm glad to have him, right, have him doing the work that he's doing. I remember speaking to him back in the day when I think he wrote the Atheist Guide handbook, which is really, really fascinating. It's been wonderful to see him go on doing, I mean, them gender studies hoax is that he's been involved in a hilarious and beautifully important at the same time. It's a wonderful mix of everything I love, you know, attacking bad ideology and humor as well, for sure.
Well, so that's how you reach people, right?
Exactly. It's very powerful. If you can make a good point, that's great. If you can wrap it up in a way that makes people laugh, that's the atomic bomb in the battle of ideas, isn't it? For sure.
That is absolutely right.
James, where can people find your YouTube channel then?
You guys, at James Klug, KLUG on YouTube. Check it out. If you like street videos, if you like fun reaction videos, commentary, all that stuff, at James Klug on YouTube. That's KLUG.
And you're on the Twitters, I imagine, as well?
Right. Twitter handle is at Real James Klug. And then Facebook's that as well. And then Instagram is at James Klug. I am working on, you know, getting them all the same, but it's a process.
And where are you on Twitter in terms of the ability to have a coherent, valuable exchange with people? It feels very tribal, doesn't it? It feels like people just want to scream at each other on Twitter.
I hate Twitter. I really prefer having just, like, you know, at least somewhat polite conversations where we can actually talk. I feel as though Twitter makes me a worse person. And I'm not even joking when I say that. Like it encourages it. And okay, hold on. I do love Twitter at the same time. So let me clarify that as well. There's aspects of it I adore, but Twitter really encourages a quick, you know, five words, make it controversial, whatever it may be. And so you get a lot of people just looking to like own the others. And that's great. It's fun. And you know, Twitter is fun. It's a great time. But I don't spend too much time on Twitter. YouTube's more of my platform. I like to highlight discussions. I like to do all that. It just gives me a little bit more time. And but I will say Twitter 2.0 with Elon Musk is 10 times better. We're actually able to have conversations now if you want to. And there's no, you know, there's almost no better platform for connecting, you know, building relationships than Twitter. So there's huge positives to Twitter. It is a good time, but it does encourage, and you'll see people as soon as they get on Twitter, you'll see them get progressively more spicy with the rhetoric, because people see what works on platforms, right? They see what works. And so as soon as something gets a little bit more likes, they'll do more of that. And it tends to be more inflammatory, quick, you know, hot takes, and those are fun, but you got to balance that out with conversations like this and all that. That's the healthy balance.
Well, James, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for speaking to me. I'll definitely be checking out those videos when they drop on your YouTube channel for sure. It sounds right up my street. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me, and congrats again on the 100th episode.
Thanks, man. It's been a pleasure.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.